Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's your, I don't know, fill in the blank of free speech. Hey, did you ever hear the band Fill in the Blanks? Phil and the Blanks, I guess the guy's name was Phil. Did he later go on to become, I think he became mayor of Ogden, Utah. And he was, I guess, kind of a conservative back in the late 70s. And they had some weird songs. One of the songs was called Auto Sex. I think it was weird, had something to do with things you can do in your car. Another was called I Took My Money to the Bank. The teller took it. She said, thank you. I don't know. And then there was one called I Want Some More. And I Want Some More. It was about people on welfare. And one of the lines was, you must be thinking that I am Teddy Kennedy. And another was, you must be thinking that I am Hubert Humphrey. So that kind of dates the song. Anyway, fill in the blanks. You can probably, they probably have a Wikipedia page. I don't know, they weren't that popular, but somebody gave me a tape. Actually, they gave me a tape of The Cure, but fill in the blank, there was, you know, these cassette tapes, there would be space at the end of the tape, maybe, and so somebody might throw on a few extra songs. So they had thrown on like three or four extra fill in the blank songs. Anyway, that has nothing to do with anything. Go to republicbroadcasting.org. Click on the donate button, send the badly needed fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664, or phone it in to 1-800-724-2719. Okay, so today is probably the Thursday show, and we have back, by popular demand, the Rocky Balboa of free speech, of red pilling, and that's William Red Pillum. William, welcome to the show.
Hey, Patrick, thank you for that nice introduction. It's nice to hear it from you. Yeah, it's been a while since we've spoken. I look forward to our discussion.
Okay, and we're going to talk about stuff. What are we going to talk about first?
Well, I mean, I guess the first thing that was on my mind was the debate you had with Nyquist. I haven't had a chance to talk to you about that yet. Definitely, that was something I was well tuned into.
All right.
And I went back and I listened to what he said that prompted Jeremy to call in the first place, and I wrote it all down. I just typed it all out. You know, everything he said about us, the generalizations that he made were just laudably incorrect, about us being atheists, about us hating America, on and on. I just thought the debate, first of all, I wanted to say that it was one of the most cordial debates I've ever heard. And it was, definitely you were very, very patient. And, I thought everybody was very respectful, and you guys even had some laughs at the end. And I know you've been over this thing so many times, you've beaten it to death like a dead horse. So I won't, try to take up the whole discussion on it, but, I don't know, I could read what was said. We could reiterate it. I did record clips of it, but I don't know what I did with those.
You can read what you have.
Okay, let me find it. Okay. Oh, that's right. I put it in the text and I sent it to a group.
While you're looking, most people, many regular listeners would know about 2 weeks ago, Jeremy and I had on Jeff Nyquist, who is a regular guest on the John Moore Show, which is a morning show on RBN. And he has his own particular views on things. And something he said provoked Jeremy's ire, and Jeremy invited him to debate me on the Patrick and Jeremy show. And I guess that was 2 weeks ago. And you know, it was cordial and respectful and friendly and hopefully productive. So you got your notes opened up?
Yeah, I'll just real quickly. One of the things I'll say is one thing that never came up was the Holocaust. And I kind of wish I'd been there to throw that in there. I don't think that's something you focus on, right? Too much?
I mean, I don't focus on it. I won't shy away from it. I occasionally will make jokes such as, it's going to be like another Holocaust, only real this time, which I think that's kind of funny to say, if you're not hypersensitive.
Yeah. So, well, I was just wondering why didn't you bring that up? I didn't know what, because it seemed like the whole premise of his argument was the Jews, they're the way they are because they've been persecuted unfairly in the Holocaust.
Well, he brought up, I don't know if he specifically said the Holocaust.
Maybe he didn't. Maybe he didn't specifically say the Holocaust, yeah.
And, you know, this went over two shows. I have it's hard for me to remember what was said at what point in the over the two hours. I have the feeling by the time he started saying, well, Jews have a right to do such and such because they were repressed or whatever. I think it was fairly late. But yeah, I mean, I wonder. Well, I mean, I don't. Do we have to wonder what that would have sounded like? If I assume that he probably takes the Holocaust narrative literally. I mean, I think that Jews were. They were active belligerents in the events of the first half of the 20th century, whether they had their own state in their name or not. I mean, they were in control of other states, most notably the Soviet Union, for a period. They were very much belligerents, and if you had even large numbers of Jews who perished during these events, you had large numbers of people who perished. These were big international events. They were major belligerents, major participants. And why should they be singled out for, you know, all this hand-wringing and tears? I don't get it. I mean, not only were they belligerents, but really they were the guilty party to a large extent.
I'd argue that they were the guilty party, and they were the instigators, the primary instigators, and we would not have had these wars without them.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair to say. It's certainly fair to have that as a hypothesis. You can never go back and redo history, so nobody ever knows. But I think that's very reasonable. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's just based on all the research I've done. Like, reading David Duke's book is a big one. I've read two of his books. I've read some of My Awakening, but I first read Jewish Supremacism, and then I read Secret Behind Communism. It's very clear. I mean, he cites evidence. He cites their own publications, you know. That's what was really powerful, especially about Jewish supremacism, reading that and going through. And that was one of the first books that I read in my early 5 years ago, Red Pill days. So I imagine, yeah, I think you're right. Like, it's fair to assume that Nyquist was definitely believes the official Holocaust narrative.
I mean, we assume. I've never heard him speak about it, so I can't. I mean, I'm not going to say for sure, but it's one. I think we assume, right?
Very fair. Yeah, very fair. Very fair, Patrick. Probably it'd be probably I should probably challenge him to a debate. But I was also I very much respected his knowledge of a lot of things, and that's why I you know, I had New Lies for Old. I bought it a few years ago. And I haven't read it really yet. I read the intro, but now I'm starting to get into it, and I want to really understand before I get into a discussion with him. And I'd like to approach it the way you did too, like two people trying to get to the truth, and give him the opportunity to do the same thing as well. It's just that when I read what he said initially about us, which I have in front of me now, and I'll go ahead and read it, it makes me very suspect, because either he's shilling for them, just knowing everything that he knows, it's hard to believe because his initial argument, I was like, oh, this guy doesn't know anything. He hasn't read anything. And then he's talking about what he's read, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, Anatoly Golitsyn, which is the New Lies for Old author, and the Perestroika Deception, which I also have only read like the intro. So I got to read both of these books. Anyway, so let me just read what he did say. The Zionist occupied government, Zog, so they think, so this is quoting, okay? So they think the Jews control everything here. They believe they have to overthrow the Jewish government here. That's what they believe. And that's where this kind of rhetoric leads. And they believe capitalism is a Jewish conspiracy. And in a sarcastically tone, and of course, oh, what's the alternative to capitalism again? Oh, I think it's socialism. Well, Nazi means National Socialist. And they don't even like to use the word Nazi because it's actually a slur. Well, that's true. You should use the word National Socialist, right? To describe them, because that's what they are. They are just another shade of socialism. Okay. Now, see, this is where... I'll reserve my comments for now. And so it's... they're against America. And just like the communists want to appropriate American symbols and paint themselves as patriots, so do neo-Nazis and anti-Semites want to do that. I can stop there and we can comment before I read on.
Well, so there are people who have done a lot of research into for instance, they read Mein Kampf, may do some other research into whatever body there is of National Socialist philosophy and ideology. I've listened on audiobooks to the first few chapters of Mein Kampf, and I would eventually like to hear the whole book, hear what he has to say. I don't put the gentleman with a mustache on a pedestal. I don't really know if I put anybody on a pedestal. I think in terms of leaders, national leaders in the 30s and early 40s, the people who were leading the main parties to the Second World War, he's hardly the villain in it. My main criticism of him is that in the end, whatever his intentions were, his country lay in ruins. And maybe he had all of the best intentions. Maybe he was in an impossible position. But still, the country was in ruins. Was there? And like I said before, you can never go back and do history over. So I can't say, well, if he had done this or if he had done that, things would have turned out better. I don't know how things would have turned out. But there's nobody could be more vilified than Hitler. And does he deserve to be the most vilified person in history? And I think clearly not. So, but that does that make me a neo-Nazi? I don't know. I mean, I'm just not really a very ideological person in the first place. So to the extent I don't describe myself as this or that, I'm just not, I think if anything, I'm just pragmatic. What works and what works might be very situational. What works now in this part of the world might not work in another part of the world or in another time. So it's that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah.
You want to speak for yourself?
Oh, yeah. I agree with you. Like, I'm not a very ideological person either, and I don't think that National Socialism would work in the current context of the demographic, the landscape that exists in the United States right now and the world. It definitely was a fantastic solution for Germany at the time. Unfortunately, Germany was ganged up on by the international Jewish cabal, which was controlling so many, too many countries for Germany to not become overwhelmed by. But they gave the greatest fight, I think, in the history of the world against international Jewry, which had really already set up shop already, even in the United States. And now, as a result of what happened in World War II, we can retrospectively look back and say, you know, and demonize Hitler for the end result of what happened. But I don't think that's fair either to do that, because they gave it. You know, I think Germany was doomed anyway, just based on what the Jews were doing in Germany already, destroying Germany from within. I mean, you had so much going on there that was just horrific. Germany was headed towards an inevitable doom, and Hitler rose up and brought them out of that and showed the rest of the world what could be done, even if just temporarily. He set up a model, I think, that would National Socialism, I think, is a model for world peace. Doesn't mean I'm a national socialist. I just objectively look at the political structure, because it's based on a country that represents its own people, its race, its culture, and it puts the people first, truly. And if that model were replicated across the world, I mean, it's such an attractive model, honestly. I mean, the Germans were the perfect example of a people to do that, because they're so industrious, and they just really are some of the greatest people in the world, some of the kindest, most sweetest people in the world, most open-minded, good-hearted, good-natured people. And this Luciferian inversion of the Germans being this evil race of people because of this fake Holocaust that didn't happen, that actually happened to them, is the most unbelievably evil deception the world has ever been subjected to. What else can I say there?
Okay. Well, do you want to go on, or I could ask you a question.
Oh, sure.
Okay. So, on a recent show, I guess what I was recording with Jeremy, which would have aired yesterday, it would have aired the day previous to this show, I mentioned a lot of stuff that I don't know about, right? Mm-hmm. Or that we don't know about. You know, and a few examples that, you know, well, there's 9/11, there's the Kennedy assassination. What else did I say? I said something happened. Was it Pearl Harbor? Or maybe it wasn't Pearl Harbor. It was something. Speaking for myself, so there's a lot of things that we don't know about because where are you? We got some work to do now. Scooby Dooby Doo, where are you? We need some help from you now. Come on, Scooby Doo.
I am so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low-quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. But I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Maybe it wasn't Pearl Harbor, it was something. Speaking for myself, so there's a lot of things that we don't know about because, or that many people don't know about because there have been cover-ups and whatnot. So the Holocaust, I mean, for me, a lot of that would be there is a range of things that I think are plausible. And it's never been a particular fascination of me. One thing is I'm a boomer, and I sometimes joke that, you know, when I was a kid in the 60s, it hadn't happened yet. Right. So maybe that's why I'm just less interested in it, because it wasn't a thing. My dad was a World War II vet. And I remember asking him once who was the worst person in the world. He said, Hitler. I said, why? He said, because he was trying to take over the world. He didn't even seem very, I mean, he didn't really even seemed very passionate about that. I don't know if he really believed it, but that was the rap. He was trying to take over the world. It wasn't he was trying to exterminate the Jews. And we had, you know, we had a Encyclopedia Britannica in our house that was it 1950? It was a good 5 years or so after it was printed, a good 5 years or so after World War II. And it had no mention of the Holocaust. It did say that you know, Hitler had passed laws that were discriminatory against Jews. That's hardly a Holocaust. So, and I think the first time I, I really heard about it was maybe in junior high school, because there was this docudrama called Roots. And then I think after Roots, there was a docudrama on the Holocaust, which I didn't see. I do remember a friend of mine in junior high school making jokes that I didn't understand about lampshades. So that's, I mean, that's it. Like, it just wasn't that big of a thing. It's a much bigger thing nowadays than it was back then. Anyway, what is your understanding of what happened? Is you just said there was no Holocaust. What is your understanding? What was the situation of Jews during 1933 to 1945 in Europe?
Well, just prior to that, there was the Weimar Republic, where the Jews were really ramping up their, sexual degeneracy. And you think it's bad here now, what they had going on there, you know, they had the LGBTQ movement, they had pedophilia, they had the Netflix series called Babylon Berlin, which kind of goes into this a little bit. I don't know that it talks about the Jews specifically, but I watched a few episodes of it. But yeah, basically you had Babylon in Berlin. It's kind of a good way to sum it up. And in World War One, it's really important to know World War One, what had happened with that, with the Treaty of Versailles, that the Jews, mm-hmm. the Zionist Jews created the Treaty of Versailles. And the Treaty of Versailles after World War One was basically cutting up Germany and distributing it up among other parts of Germany, like the Danzig corridor or the Sudetenlands, is given to this Frankenstein communist state of Czechoslovakia, which was a Jew creation, a communist Jew creation. And so we had Germans being persecuted by Bolsheviks in those regions, and not just persecuted, but murdered, tortured. And Hitler had to do something. So, after many, many attempts at peace, after many, many attempts at diplomatic efforts, finally, you know, it was clear that England, controlled by the Jews, was telling Poland, you don't have to capitulate to Hitler or give him in to anything he's asking for. And you had them actually making statements that Hitler, you know, that Germany's going to have war whether they like it or not. So this is outlined in the Tell the Truth and Shame the Devil book by Gerard Manoohan. So exactly the opposite of what we're told is what was going on. There really Germany had no choice but to invade Poland and go and take back, West Prussia, a.k.a. the Danzig Corridor. And so that's what they did, and they had to save his people. And, you know, then prior to that, it's what happened in 1938 in Czechoslovakia with the Sudetenlands, the southern parts of Germany, which were, But the situation 33 to 45. Go ahead.
Well, I just had a little follow up question. So you said Britain was controlled by Jews, and that you just mentioned 1938 in Sudetenland. The other gentleman from that era with a stylish mustache was Neville Chamberlain. What's your take on Neville Chamberlain? He's maligned now as appeasing Hitler. Was he appeasing Hitler? Was he controlled by Jews? What's your take on Neville Chamberlain?
Yeah, no, I think this was part of the cabinet there that was and the part of the government in that was more reasonable. Neville Chamberlain got marginalized and kind of ousted because of his because he was on the right side of history.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
homeowners. Are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Everyone around me seems to get sick but me. My brother got the flu twice. My mother was down with some sort of fever. People at work were taking sick days off, and others were just plain tired and run down. And me? Well, I just keep feeling great all the time with Extendovite. My grandfather used to talk about the power of garlic and other herbs he took that kept him healthy. I'm lucky. Extendovite was just what I needed to keep me healthy, and Extendovite is all natural. Extendovite was designed for the heart but does so much more by keeping me healthy all the time. I'll take Extendovite forever. Get your 2-month supply for only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. My name is Rick, and you can be like me just by calling 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Standing 6'4", weighing 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the Republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the Republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
And the part of government that was more reasonable. Neville Chamberlain got marginalized and kind of ousted because he was on the right side of history. Mm-hmm. You know, call him the appeaser. That's really annoying. He saw that, if you've got to know first off that Hitler was really, really did not want war. He wanted peace. And it was Churchill and the international Jews that were the ones pushing for war. It wasn't Hitler. Hitler made all attempts he could possibly make toward peace. He just wanted Germany back. He wanted he wanted the Jews out of the levers of power in Germany, and he wanted to help the rest of Europe get that too. That's what they're trying to attribute to him wanting to take over the world. It was the Jews that have taken over the world and wanted to take over the world. They had already done it to a large degree already. If you mentioned 1933 specifically, there's a newspaper article in the Daily Herald. I don't remember the name of the newspaper, the Sun or some British newspaper that says, International Judea declares war on Germany. So in 1933, International Judea, the quote-unquote shadow government of the world, declared war on Germany. And they started to instigate boycotts everywhere, spread misinformation propaganda about Germany, just like they did in World War I, saying, you know, with a stab in the back, where they said that Germany was bayoneting children, and they had this boogeyman called the Hun, and then propagandized America into the war so that Britain would, under the Balfour Declaration, get Palestine for the Jews, well, for the Rothschilds, so that they would have a homeland, because taking over everyone else's country, subverting it, yes, that wasn't quite enough. You know, if you go back 150 years to the Pale of Settlement, this enormous landmass in East or Western Russia, Ukraine, Georgia, Poland, all this huge, wasn't enough for the Jews. So they had to get Palestine as well. Right. Make that. Go ahead.
Well, okay. So, I mean, that answers my question pretty much. Now, do we have more to go over regarding Jeff Nyquist, yeah, or should we go on to another? Okay.
Yeah. Hey, let me. It disappears. I have to do the search term again here. Okay. All right, I got it. So let me just find my little place that I left off on. Okay. And the thing is, so continuing, these are modern movements, and they're instinctively atheistic. They're instinctively anti-American. Okay. They don't have any truck with the founding fathers, anything that George Washington, Alexander Hamilton, John Jay, or Thomas Jefferson believed. Okay, let me just comment on that. Okay, the thing is, these modern movements, and they're instinctively atheistic, instinctively anti-American. Wow, I mean, these are just really, these statements are, you know, that's a, like you, I'm not an ideological person. I'm an objective observer of history. And to be thrown in this camp just because we point out Jewish power, I find this to be incredibly disingenuous, or just incredibly ignorant to make these kinds of statements. Because and then I try to put myself in other people's shoes and understand, why would they make these statements? You know, what have I done that may seem that way to these people that are making statements like this? Well, instinctively anti-American. Well, I don't know if you listen to any Mike Gatti shows, but I would like to, you know, take America back, quote unquote. But if you listen to Mike Gatti shows, you'll realize that from his research, and I don't know anybody else who's done research on this depth level, is in the Library of Congress and, you know, looked up source documents, it just has this unbelievable amount of knowledge. You realize that the Constitution was set up for the purpose that it's being set up. It wasn't set up for us. It wasn't set up for we the people. It was set up for them, the oligarchs. It was set up for them, the aristocracy. It was set up for so that they could do exactly what they're doing right now. And a lot of people are going to have a problem with that statement. But if you look at the fact that, yes, we have a Bill of Rights, and this should be something we observe, and this should be something that's respected by our government, but it never has been. If you listen to yesterday's show from Mike Gatti, it was a great show. He talks about that. It's never been. Why do we have a civil war if the Constitution protects us? Why do we have all these other wars that are unconstitutional wars if the Constitution protects us? So, you know, maybe on some micro level, the Constitution's protected people in certain instances, and maybe, you know, but it's essentially a veil, like a sort of a sham. The Bill of Rights is put out there as sort of a way to appease us, controlled opposition sham to keep us appeased while they, you know, continue to set up shop even more. And just look how much they've done that already.
Well, I mean, you could say about a lot of rules or laws that they are observed in the breach, or the you know, the exception is the rule or something like that. Like what I tend to say about the Constitution, I like the idea of constitutional government, which is not the same thing as saying that it's not the same thing as either saying our Constitution's perfect or anywhere near perfect or even good. And it's also not the same thing as saying that the Constitution has by and large been followed. But, you know, there's an idea of constitutional government. I think there's a lot in the Constitution that's worthwhile. At the same time, it's a very fair criticism to say that, well, both criticisms, one that it was written in the self-interest, to a large extent, in the self-interest of the people who wrote it, and also that that it hasn't been followed that closely. And, you know, you mentioned wars. When was the last? Well, I guess we declared wars in 1941, immediately after Pearl Harbor. That's the last time we declared wars. We haven't. There's a lot of wars that weren't declared, and you brought up the Civil War, a big one. And the thing about the Civil War is, while the Constitution, it describes the process by admitting states, there's nothing in the Constitution, one way or another, about states leaving the Union, which is certainly a shortcoming. But okay, anyway, fair enough. So
I think my Gaddy would beg to differ with you on that. That was actually, you might go back and listen to the show from yesterday. He addresses that point specifically about secession. That's a specific point.
So what did he say about secession?
Well,
as far as I know, there's nothing in it.
That it is not constitutional for the constitution of the federal government to supersede the constitution of the individual states. I believe that's what he said. I don't remember if it was that whatever is written in the Constitution about that is being ignored, or the way the Constitution is written, the U.S. Constitution is written in a way that allows some sort of loophole around that.
Okay, well, what I said specifically was that the Constitution outlines a process for admitting states to the Union, and it does not outline a process for states leaving the Union. That's not to say that leaving the Union, that states don't have the right to leave the Union. That's a different matter. But the process for leaving the Union is not something that's spelled out. It's not explicit. The right to do so or not may be implicit in the Constitution, but it's not dealt with explicitly, which I think would be a shortcoming in retrospect. You could say it's a shortcoming, but of course, for the people writing the Constitution, maybe they want the Union to be a one-way street, but they don't want the various states, especially the original states, the original 13 states, to feel that they're permanently giving up their sovereignty, and therefore they intentionally blurred it. So maybe it wasn't a shortcoming, maybe it was very intentional. But anyway, if you want to respond to that, fine. Otherwise, we can move on to whatever you want to.
He mentioned Alexander Hamilton in there, like as if Alexander Hamilton is some sort of good guy. Alexander Hamilton was a banker, was absolutely for the central bank.
He was actually a Puerto Rican rapper. I saw the documentary on him, or the musical, whatever. He was Puerto Rican, and all the others were black, except King George was white. King George was white, and he was the only person who actually knew how to sing too.
I saw something about a musical like maybe 5 years ago on the side of a bus, Hamilton. Are you talking about that? I'm gonna have to.
Yeah, talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, I'm gonna have to go tough my way through that.
And Thomas Jefferson was funky. He was funky, and you know the weird thing is, he was.
Hello.
All right. Even though he was like 6'3", the actor that they got to portray him was this little black guy. And who did they have? James Madison, who was like 5'4". They had this giant black guy portray him. So it was all weird. But anyway.
Wow. Of course. Well, there you go. I believe the Jews are behind that. So, yeah. Well, I think let me finish reading a little more on what he wrote. You know? I'll just read through the whole thing. And then wrap it up. So he says, they have no truck with those ideas at all. What does he mean by truck with those ideas at all? What is that? I was trying to, did I get the word wrong? Somebody said that that's a valid word to use. They have no truck with those ideas at all, he said. And those ideas being, you know, the founding fathers. They have no truck with those ideas at all, he says. So, or he gets off saying something like that. Okay, so their ideas are antithetical. They're completely against the ideas of our founding fathers. So they're enemies of the Constitution, too. Only they're a very small, loud minority. And by the way, the Russians support the Nazis. They have supported the Nazis since the Nazi diaspora was taken over by the communists at the end of World War II. Even they controlled Martin Bormann and Heinrich Mueller, and the head of the Gestapo, were both, by common report and report, German intelligence officials. Those guys were Soviet agents, and they ended up being major figures in setting up the Nazi diaspora in South America. There's a book about Francis Parker Yockey, who was a leading American Nazi. He was working with KGB, according to information in that book and his biography. In fact, he traveled to Castro's Cuba, and they knew that from his travel records, the many, I think, 50 so passports he had in his possession when they arrested him in San Francisco in, I think, 1961. He killed himself in an SF jail to avoid a supposed interrogation by the FBI at that time. But the Nazis and the communists, the Red-Brown Alliance, they are intermittently allied. And since the Russians since Moscow turned the Nazi diaspora into a false flag operation, the end of World War II, a good portion of the Nazis that you've seen in operation across the world have been working secretly together with the communists, and there have been a lot of interesting literature and writing about this. Oh, boy. The whole Nazi-communist confusion there.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Like, I don't mean to be disparaging. I was going to ask, did he say anything about Antarctica, which maybe that would be disparaging. But, you know, like this whole idea that, you know, the Nazis and the communists were in league with each other and only pretended to fight a war with 30 million deaths or whatever it was. If that's the idea, I don't, maybe it's not insulting to ask if like they've got a secret base in Antarctica, if that's what it is. I just don't get it. It just seems pretty convoluted, but. Anyway, what
included? Yeah, I would say I would agree, and I think it just completely leaves out. It just completely leaves out what Germany was dealing with, and then you know their sort of immune response to the international Jew, which is what we're dealing with right now. And we don't have an immune response to the international Jew when we've got to deal with you know people coming out with this stuff. You know what I mean? I mean, well, people are going to come out with stuff like this, and I guess this is our immune response to all right, well, conversations.
We only have a few minutes left. One thing I will say is, and is this in Jeff's defense or just an explanation, or is it in Alex Jones's defense? I don't know. But because the censorship and the repression of speaking about Jewish power, the absolute taboo on speaking of Jewish power it's become, I guess, what are you familiar with Antonio Gramsci, who was a Italian Marxist in like the 1920s and 20s. Well, some people had interesting ideas. He had an idea, and maybe I'm misunderstanding his idea, but he was talking about like ideas becoming hegemonic and ideas become hegemonic to the point where people self-enforce their own censorship. They self-enforce their own repression. And maybe I'm completely misrepresenting his thoughts, but it seems to me that that's kind of the situation that we're in, is we've internalized so many Jewish priorities, and in particular, we as a society have internalized the taboo on the discussion of Jewish power to the extent that most people don't even realize it's taboo, and so they just think of like any thought of explaining things by Jewish power goes right out of their head, and so they look for alternative ways to explain it. And it doesn't matter.
Here he comes, here comes Speed Racer. He's a demon on wheels. He's a demon and he's gonna be chasing after someone. He's gaining on you, so you better look alive. He's busy revving up the powerful Mach 5. And when the odds are against him and they're...
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3DBunkers.com for more details or visit 3DBunkers.com.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
One of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs. For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Racer, go, Speed Racer, go! He's off and flying as he guns a car around the track. He's jamming down the pedal like he's never coming back. Adventure's waiting just ahead! Go, Speed Racer, go, Speed Racer, go, Speed Racer, go!
Like any thought of explaining things by Jewish power goes right out of their head, and so they look for alternative ways to explain it, and it does get convoluted because, I mean, Jewish power is the answer to the main questions. It doesn't necessarily answer everything, but it is the what I call the biggest organizing principle, the most important organizing principle of our political economy in our era. And trying to explain things without reference to it, you're not going to get good answers. That's what I think. We got another 3 minutes or so. What are your final thoughts?
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with you. And I think, yeah, that's how people's brains have been wired, because the Jews have wired our brains with their propaganda, and they've wired our brains away from them being the source of the problem. And you're absolutely right. I agree with you 100%. They are the bottom of the rabbit hole. And I would say that that Semitism itself is the toxicity of humanity. Semitism is the problem. Semitism, you know, people talk about people being anti-Semites. Are you kidding me? Are you a pro-Semite? Like, what is wrong with you? Wake up. Stop being pro-Semitic, because Semitism is poison.
We no longer have time for a thorough discussion of exactly what you mean by Semitism.
Well, what do they mean by anti-Semitism? Anybody who is doing what we're doing, talking about Jewish power.
And if Semitism is simply the opposite or the counter of anti-Semitism, and you have the understanding of anti-Semitism that we have, which is basically it's just a slur.
Right.
It's a slur against anybody who would analyze Jewish power. Okay.
And
I
would just also finish with tying socialism to communism in the context of national socialism is absolutely ridiculous, because national socialism is the only type of socialism that would work. It doesn't really matter what your ideology is. I mean, it doesn't really matter. And what matters is that you have leaders that love the people or not. If you have leaders that hate the people, then you can put capitalism, communism, whatever ideology you want to in there, and it's going to suck for the people. Okay? In the case of Hitler, he loved his people, put his people first, he put the good of the German people first. If the rest of the world would do that with their own people, we would have a world at much better world peace right now.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining me, William.
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity, Patrick, and I'm honored to be on your show, and it's really great to talk to you again.
And when can people hear you? Because you're a fixture now on RBN.
On Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I'm Wednesdays on the National Intel Report from 5 to 7 p.m. Central. Thursday, I've discussed with Jeremy in Plain Sight from 9 to 10 p.m. Central. And then on Fridays, I got the Punch Bowl at the same time, 9 to 10 p.m. Got my show, just me an hour. So.
Okay, great. Okay, well, thank you for joining me, and I will be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Hercules, hero of song and story, Hercules, winner of ancient glory, fighting for the right, fighting with his might, with the strength of 10 ordinary men. Hercules, people are safe when near him. Hercules, only the evil fear him. Softness in his eyes, iron in his thighs, virtue in his heart, fire in every part of the mighty Hercules.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.